Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with three lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.
Bernstein and Rahimi, 9 a.m. to noon on Sports Radio 670 The Score.
In play in front, Muscala, open top side three, good. They're going to count that three, but it's too little as the Chicago Bulls, with a 111-110 victory, Bulls win. And I can finally exhale. Wow. Bill.
I saw that movie.
Seen that movie?
Nicely played, Bill Weddington. That was last night's Bulls Thunder broadcast on Sports Radio 670 The Score, your home for the Chicago Bulls. And here to talk about that successfully avoided loss.
Yeah!
Yay, avoided loss is Rob Schaefer. He is on Twitter at Rob_Schaefer via the Bulls Beat, NBC Sports Chicago, and the Bulls Talk podcast. He's on Twitch at twitch.tv/Chicago670 The Score, and he is on the Score Hotline, presented by Circa Resort and Casino in Las Vegas, home of the world's largest sports book. And Rob, I'm glad that Billy Donovan said what he said, because as a coach, you got to teach off that one, because that could have been way, way worse, but you kind of have to not let him forget how bad it could have been.
Yeah, got to be a learning experience. As much as this team and the Bulls, having lost 7-9, needed the result against a 14-win team, 7 fourth quarter turnovers, 28-point mid third quarter lead, you get stripped away to a one possession game in the last minute. It was funny. Rick and I were just talking offline about how reminiscent it was of, games in Oklahoma City the last two seasons. It's been a little bit of a house of horrors for the Bulls in recent years. But, a win's a win. The Bulls certainly needed one. But for guys like Kobe and Io, I know it was Zach's first game back, but he had some low moments in that fourth quarter too, soaking up some offensive possessions, getting back cut by Giddey for that layup to make it a one-point game with 15 seconds left.
He's awesome, by the way, Giddey. He looks like? He looks like LaMelo Ball.
And there you go, the Australia tie, the big Lee ball handler, 6'7", 6'8".
Yep.
He's going to be phenomenal, especially once he figures it out as a shooter and scorer. I was really happy to get a full game's look at him. For the guards, that's what Philly emphasized, beating that full court pressure, beating traps. They just really, really struggled to do that, burned through multiple timeouts after getting cornered on the sidelines. That's a big issue. The good news is it was only a rest game for DeMar DeRozan, right? How much did they miss him and his kind of calming presence? If the Bulls are going to pull out of the slide that they're in, they're going to need to perform a little bit better than that down the stretch games, especially against inferior opponents.
I'm glad you brought up the calming presence aspect of that, because it's something that was noted on the post game last night on NBC Sports Chicago, Rob, was the Bulls need somebody to calm this team down who isn't named DeMar or Io. What was your impression of that and just the sets on the floor you were seeing without those two?
Yeah, it's amazing that we're even talking about Io in that context at this point in his rookie season, but it's true. He's really blossomed, other than a couple down games recently, taking on more ball handling, playmaking responsibilities. He was obviously outstanding last night. I do think last night it certainly got frenetic, especially with Kobe and Zach down the stretch. And Io obviously fouls out. Even that play was him kind of rushing a little bit, right? Picking up that charge. That was his sixth foul, and they didn't have him for the last 3 or 4 minutes of the game, which hurts. So it was a little frenetic last night. I do think largely Zach specifically has been a lot better in that context this season than he was in recent years. He's attributed that to learning from DeMar DeRozan, and last night you kind of see what it looks like without, you know, that outlet to kind of relieve pressure. So, yeah, it was certainly a regression. But, you know, once DeMar gets back, I think that's how this team should be judged. It just, you know, it's similar to how much the defense dropped off in that first game against Orlando, right? Without Caruso, it's like, man, this guy really is that important to this one specific aspect of this team. It's a little bit harrowing. At the same time, you know, this Bulls team is so shorthanded right now. You're just kind of constantly reminded of how important each of the pieces that they're losing are. So, you know, fortunately for them, DeMar's back on Wednesday. Again, just a rest day, and it was well-timed with Zach coming back. He did play well through three quarters, nearly had a triple-double in his first game back. But the Bulls will certainly not only miss getting their closer in DeMar, they'll certainly look forward to getting him back, but also, you know, he kind of completes that two-headed monster of him and Zach that makes it so difficult for defenses to defend. That two-man action where Zach and DeMar will run screen and roll, it doesn't quite look the same when it's Zach and Kobe. And that's no slight at Kobe. He's been, you know, pretty great this season other than a shooting slump the last few games. But, you know, this Bulls team is meant to have those two guys, you know, as their top two weapons down the stretch of games. And you saw what it looked like without one of them.
All right, I need your help here. I got to talk something through that I'm trying to say. I don't know if it's true, if it's not true.
You said you weren't going to do this.
No, I didn't. I said I was going to do it because this is always free therapy for me.
I'm sorry, Rob.
Ever since the first preseason game with this roster, something hasn't been right about Nikola Vucevic. He missing shots he usually makes, maybe not being in the same comfortable spots on the floor. And I can't get past that it's DeMar. I can't get past this idea that Occam's razor just says, what's different? Why is it different? Why is it not quite right? And maybe this is the underlying DeMar DeRozan career issue of him doing what he does and putting up all his numbers. And because of how he has to do what he does, some of the unintended consequences. Is it fair to think that somehow Vooch is suffering some of these unintended consequences of life with DeMar?
I think it's fair to hypothesize that DeMar has maybe a little bit of a role in that. And I only say this because he's been so brilliant this season that there are games where when he gets in score mode, things kind of shut off the ball and for other guys on the court. And again, I don't mean that necessarily in a negative way because he's been so brilliant. I mean, the Magic game is an example, right? They had 10 assists that whole game. DeMar had 41 points and they were shorthanded. But it was a lot of, you know, isolation heavy play, a lot of DeMar go get a bucket. That's how the Bulls have won games this season. So, you know, maybe that's a little bit of a double-edged sword, but it's been mostly a positive for the Bulls. So I think that's a fair thing to maybe hypothesize and begin to chew on. I do think Vooch's problems have to be bigger than one player, though. I really do think the more that you watch of him, the root of it, I don't want to say the scheme, but just the fact that he has been of kind of the star level players on this team asked to sacrifice and adapt the most. You know, he just hasn't been getting the compliment of post-ups that he's typically used to in his career. Like you said, Dan, not in the same spots on the floor necessarily. You see his finish. I mean, to me, it's the finishing and the stuff from floater range and like the short mid range. That has been the root of kind of the offensive drop off that he's had because, you know, as much as people get hung up on the 3-point shooting and, oh, he's a big guy, why is he out at the 3-point line? He's shooting, I haven't looked at it today, but somewhere in the 33% range from 3-point range, that kind of was his career track record before the 40% season last year. He was, I think, 34% over a 3-season span when he first started taking threes at a higher volume. It's really been those kind of push shots, the floaters, the little hook shots that rim out. And to me, maybe that's a product of just catching passes in rhythm, being in the wrong spots on the floor. I mean, even last night, again, he played well. How many times did the Bulls miss him for entry passes when he was, you know, open or had position in the post? So I don't know if I can go all the way there and say it's all on DeMar, maybe not even all on DeMar, but just it's all on how the Bulls are using DeMar. Mm-hmm. I think it's a broader scheme thing for Vooch that kind of had him out of his rhythm from the start of the season. And although he'll have these breakout games, he just hasn't quite found it yet over a 5-10 game stretch, for example, which is really what the Bulls need from him when they're this shorthanded. Obviously, you get Zach and DeMar back. That's helpful. But without Lonzo's shooting, obviously without Lonzo and Caruso, they're not going to be able to grind out as many of these defensive games. They need him to find that consistency. And with him being, you know, so often, you know, seems like he's hanging around the perimeter so often, he's running those pick and roll, pick and pop actions that he can do, but it just hasn't been, you know, that hasn't been how he's primarily been used in his NBA career so often. I think that's all added up to an inconsistent season for him. And you know, maybe the bright side of the shorthanded thing, or maybe one positive that can come out of it is, you know, maybe they run a little bit more offense through Vooch and he gets going a little bit. I think that's one of the bigger storylines to track for the Bulls as they try to, you know, gear up for this month to 2 month stretch where they're going to be without a lot of guys, but still try to maintain the seeding position that they're in.
We're talking to Rob Schaefer of NBC Sports Chicago. He always does a great job with his 10 observations column. And one of the things you said in this one was talking about Coby White and how he's had a bit of shooting struggles. We've seen it from 3-point range, something that's not characteristic of him and what he's brought, but we're seeing it again. 3 of 14 last night. It's a stretch of 3 games that might be a little concerning. What are your thoughts on just him not finding it from three right now?
Yeah, I mean, Kobe's always had a little bit of a streakiness to his game, right, as a shooter. I will say of late, and I don't want to, like, fully absolve or anything like that, just ups and downs happen, shooting variance happens. It's a pretty small sample at this point, 3 games that he's been really, really wayward. Him and Io have been playing big minutes lately, especially with Zach out and with Lonzo out. Zach's back now. But those guys have been, you know, before last night, Kobe plays 31. He's been up above 35, you know, 4 of the previous 5 games before that. I was been up around 40 minutes a game. To me, when I see Kobe miss a lot of shots short like that, a lot of good shots short, and when I say good shots, I mean open looks, my mind goes to the workload thing. He's had kind of an uneven season with COVID and the shoulder injury thing. Again, I don't want to completely absolve. It could just be a down stretch, and he could, you know, pop right back up. But before this 3-game stretch, he was up near 40% and was playing some of the best basketball of his career, honestly. So maybe it's just a little bit of a downturn for him, and we'll see if he can pull himself out of it. Because before that, like I said, he'd been shooting it pretty well. He'd shown a lot of progress, you know, as a finisher, decision maker on drives. I still think that growth, you know, is real and matters, but he's just got to find it again. I will point out he made one of the bigger shots of the game last night as the Bulls, you know, couldn't find ways to not only begin but end offensive possessions without turnovers. He had a 3 that made it a 9-point game, I think, with just under 3 minutes to go. So Kobe does have a knack for doing that kind of thing, but the big picture of his shooting lately has been a little bit tough. Toronto on Wednesday, even though it's at home, you know, they're a pretty good defensive team, pretty, you know, aggressive with their closeout. So that could be a tough one to break out of it with. But, you know, we'll see if he's able to, because – with Lonzo out, even, you know, Billy kind of tipped his hand a little bit. He started Io next to Zach in the backcourt last night, even though DeMar wasn't playing. But, you know, whether Kobe's starting or coming off the bench, they really, really need his scoring in addition to his playmaking. So they'll need him to pull out of, you know, whatever kind of downturn he's been in for the last handful of games.
I think about it every time the Bulls play Toronto or Denver, the idea of the track record of Mark Eversley and Arturas Karnišovas being understanding development in a real sense, in a way that we as Bulls observers have to appreciate. Some of these guys who we just see and names that come through and some of the two-way contract guys may end up being more than just guys. And I know they don't talk a lot. You don't get to sit there and have long conversations with the Bulls Brain Trust about the difference between guys that are just on a roster and guys who they think might have a little something. Like, the Io is a revelation. We're already taking Io for granted, which is crazy. That it's just been meteoric, his level of arrival in the NBA. But when I see somebody like Tyler Cook,
yes,
you know, like some of the, you know, Javonte Green's 28. He's not a developmental prospect, but somebody like Tyler Cook, who's got some ways to go with the shooting form and all that. But you look at raw materials and you start looking at traits in that regard. How do you start to evaluate, and how do you know what the Bulls think about some of these other pieces?
Well, it's been a little easier this year because then you see guys like Alphonso McKinney, who falls into the Javonte category. He's not necessarily a prospect, but a guy who comes in, Malcolm Hill comes in, and when these guys immediately, you know, get larger opportunity, standard contracts, that tells you a little something. You know, a lot of this in the Bulls front office and coaching staff has been so aligned. Like, that's such a you know, noteworthy part of that tandem that they've been, you know, in pretty constant communication. When a player earns Billy's trust, to me, that is a really, really good indicator. Like, Io, from no matter what you thought of what he looked like in summer league or maybe the first preseason game or two, Billy, the way he talked about him from the first day of training camp, it was like, you could just see, now you didn't see this coming from Io, but you could see him cracking the rotation, being that first guy in a next man up capacity, being a guy that was talked about glowingly around, you know, by all types of players and Billy, you know, for being obviously curious, asking questions, learning, you know, getting better in a practice sense. We don't necessarily get to see the full that full arc in a practice setting. We've seen it in games from Iowa. So I think that's a big thing for me. Tyler Cook is a good example because he really impressed me with the work he did on Giannis, even though nobody's going to stop Giannis. I thought he did a decent enough job bothering him on Friday. That game was, unfortunately, Tyler Cook is three games back from a sprained ankle, goes out with a left eye injury last night, and we don't really know his status moving forward. But, him getting trusted with an assignment like that, him being turned to, if you remember earlier in the season, he was being used a lot as a small ball five for the Bulls, who lack so much size up front. To me, when you start getting kind of weightier assignments like that, even if it's kind of Billy, going to the only option that he has to a degree, that's when it starts to tell me, okay, this guy is doing things not only that, we as media people or fans can see from the outside, they're also doing the things behind the scenes that truly makes, the players that ascend from summer league flyer, 10-day, like the Alex Caruso's of the world, the guys that ascend from that level to being, starters, stars, whatever you want to call them, they do the behind-the-scenes stuff too. So to me, when I see guys like a Tyler Cook, like an Io, getting that opportunity, getting spoken up highly by coaches and coaching staff, that to me is an indicator that they are potentially one of those guys. It's not 100% hit rate, as it's not in any player evaluation perspective, but I think that can usually be a good indicator.
Well, and I think when you bring up Tyler Cook, he is somebody who he's made a mark, especially in just fun plays like Javonte Green has. We saw a bunch of alley-oops and before he got injured the first time, not with the eye injury. So I think we're all hoping to see a little bit more of that, the explosive play that we saw. And frankly, I think just used a lot as the five, given the team situation right now.
And I mean, it seems like, again, these are small sample sizes, but it seems like he can guard wings. And it seems like he has that kind of energetic quality to him defensively that the Bulls really, really miss. Especially when Caruso was out, and Caruso was obviously going to be out at least the next 6 to 8 weeks. So I agree with you, Layla. I have a bit of a reputation for getting too excited over quote-unquote flashes and these prospects who come in and they show you something and, oh, let's see more. But I feel the same way about Tyler Cook.
And that's okay now. Like, I'm trying to convince myself that I used to just be like, nah, he's a guy. Nah, that's just a thing. That's just end of... It's different now under this regime. They now believe that they've got a system in place to make guys better. And that's cool.
Yep.
We'll take it.
It's nice to have the resounding agreement, especially because Rob and I covered the dark years of this franchise recently.
And Layla, a guy from those dark years now, Max Strus. I mean, come on, I know it's a previous regime, but oh man, like he makes it out the door. Look at what he's doing in Miami. There's another team, Miami, that has a reputation for just uncovering these absolute jewels.
That's right. Has Strus gotten paid?
I don't believe so. I don't know if he's still on a two-way with Miami, but he hasn't gotten a legitimate extension, a la the Gafford, who got legit off his second round contract. I don't think he's gotten that yet, but this offseason, I mean, the way he's played this season, it wouldn't surprise me at all.
I miss Daniel Gafford.
I do too. That's exactly what they need right now. He had a two-year contract? Oh, cool. Rob Schaefer, thank you, sir. Appreciate it as always.
Thanks, Rob.
Always a pleasure.
That is Rob Schaefer, always smart stuff on your Chicago Bulls. When we come back, I guess, how do we set... We need to be honest. We need to be out of town honest, perhaps, about what could be the landscape of the National Football Conference. Is that a fair way to put it? Like, really thinking about what we could be looking at now amid all the Bears' uncertainty.
Okay, so here's the thing. Our sour grapes are a good feeling, but then you're like, now what? But the now what might also be a good feeling. All right, we have to share something. I have to share something real quick because it's making me laugh.
What?
So it's so cold today that Dan and I are just like half asleep, just sitting here shivering, conserving energy in the studio.
Yeah, unlike Mully and Haw, cold makes both of us tired. I guess I go out of my way to actually fall asleep in the cold, and maybe it's just the paired stimuli.
Yeah, I can't handle it. And also, like, I just sit here like this, just conserving. And because you have to check your temperature all the time. I run like 96, which doesn't make a lot of sense. But then I'm like, I need the heat or something. And that's when I remembered, it's falling iguana time.
That's right. We've entered falling iguana season.
Dan and I are just falling iguanas with chairs. That's why we didn't fall. So that's it, really. I just wanted to share that with you all, because if you haven't experienced the falling iguana phenomenon, it's worth a discussion.
That would be like our XRT sort of full of water singer-songwritery band, just the two of us as falling iguanas.
Yeah, but we don't play any instruments because that require energy.
No,
great show.
You just like one slow note on the viola.
Is this just like on the viola, the most ineffectual of all instruments, aka the one I know how to play?
It's like a low drone note, and then I do just like
D.
I can play like Robert Fripp level atmospheric guitar, atonal guitar by accident, and then I say it's avant-garde.
Robert Frith?
Robert Fripp. Wasn't he King Crimson? I think Robert Fripp. And it's like a collection of weird notes that don't make any sense. And a bunch of hipsters go, oh, yeah, it's really arty and good. And everybody else is like, no, it sounds like crap.
The things you're saying right now, I feel like Bart when Milhouse got a tutor.
Now look him up. Look up Robert Fripp. I'm not wrong. He's like an avant-garde weird art music guitarist who played with King Crimson. And I guarantee you, I'm going to get music explained on this one. He's awesome. Who are you using the guitar rankings, which I have right here in my hand? One of the greatest guitarists of all time. Fine. Whatever you say, fine. All I know is I heard a bunch of it and it didn't sound like music to me.
After transition, our text line got real funny, basketball gossipy, and then animal scenario combining-y. Like this text from 708. I'm honestly expecting to find an army of evil lab monkeys with cowboy boots and hats riding coyote dogs taking over the state of Pennsylvania.
Commanded by Robert Fripp.
And picking Dan Quinn up from the airport.
Yeah. We got, and then people were describing what was in George's Honda Accord. Yeah.
The number of like empty plastic water bottles by the seat.
I was crying laughing. And then people were saying what the license plate was saying.
And 779 says King Crimson, R.I.P. Louis Anderson.
Fight Club, R.I.P. Louis Anderson.
You know, we had a perfectly good sports topic we were going to get into today. We have like 6 minutes.
I know. And you know what? We should do it. But it's worth a discussion that I think deserves a whole actual segment.
Right?
This sports topic.
No, it is.
R.I.P. Louis Anderson.
No, but it is a good sports topic.
Report on that, Barrett Sports Media.
We can do it tomorrow.
Two radio hosts do pointless segment.
Thanks for the confirmation here. The 847 says, yes, Robert Fripp, a bunch of incongruous notes. I'd rather listen to the Bears recorder playing Bear Down. Well, who wouldn't?
Do you think that there is a chance that George's horn plays like Bear Down, like part of it or something like the General Lee?
Probably. And then he does it in traffic, and then Ryan Poles tumbleweeds himself. Just
tuck and roll.
He just opens
just tuck the, and roll out the car.
He does the Ralph Wiggum down the hill. Like, oh, here we go. Into the ditch.
Doesn't that end in a fiery explosion? I'm sorry. It's my fault. I really just wanted to get the falling iguana discussion in.
I mean, you might as well. I mean,
I
whatever.
Might as well.
The NFC's not going anywhere.
That's true.
The NFC kind of eliminated itself in a way.
It's literally going to be there.
This is the point, though. It is literally going to be there. The NFC is not going anywhere. I just probably won't win the Super Bowl.
Yeah.
I mean, maybe it will. And thought it through, Rick. Expert?
No, just, looking at the quarterbacks left, you want to trust Jimmy Garoppolo? Nah, not particularly.
Who knows if he's going to be in the NFC?
I hope Jimmy Garoppolo just, like, wins everything, and it's just like a big screw you to everybody.
By the way, the next time when Jimmy Garoppolo wants to throw the ball out to the flat, if he moves his feet along with his upper body, it'll be the first time.
R.I.P. Louis Anderson.
That would be okay with you if he did that?
Yes, because it's like, okay, he's making the correct decision. Cool. But the reason your passes almost become pick sixes all the time is because he's just moving his upper body and flinging it out there like he's got Josh Allen's arm instead of his own.
Have you seen the still photo of Patrick Mahomes' release on the one to Tyreek Hill?
The one that like went
the one to Tyreek Hill. Armpit.
Yes, the one that he's at a 3/4 level delivery, like, and somehow spun it to Tyreek Hill when no other, maybe Stafford, but very few other quarterbacks would have been able to complete
like
that pass.
Logan style,
not quite Bone Logan as Joe Bartosz once called him. I don't think it was quite that, but yeah, like Scott F. Ross is what it looks like Cubs reliever Scotty F. Ross.
Oh, well, his dad was a reliever for the Rangers.
And the Cubs
had a job for a long time because the Rangers needed all the relief pitching they could get.
Past tense?
Their starters were out so early. Yes. They had a lot of innings to eat.
We do not have the time.
Here come the Robert Fripp people on the text line. This says that Robert Fripp and his wife have some bizarre music videos. 815 says, Fripp is a guitar god. And the 630 says, as long as you don't do the current version of what Robert Fripp is up to now.
How do what, all of you Nazi know about Robert Fripp?
But what is?
How do all of you know also?
I remember getting a call from my cousin. My cousin was
George license plate. Yes. I can't.
Yeah, the George license plates are good too.
No ticks for you.
I remember my cousin calling me and he's like, I just went to the weirdest concert ever. I said, what? He goes, it was a free concert on something campus. And he's like, it was Robert Fripp from King Crimson. I thought it'd be awesome. I said, it wasn't awesome? He goes, no. He played like 4 notes in the first 15 minutes and everybody left. Like, it sounds great. Sorry, I missed it.
This is the best joke that I didn't know about until now. Yeah, our text line has been on a roller coaster today. Like,
our text line. R.I.P. Louis Anderson.
R.I.P. Louis Anderson.
The best part is the wait, because the music just goes on and on.
R.I.P. Louis Anderson. Wait.
He saw Shane literally fall off his chair.
And Tanny, and like when it's bad enough that Tanny punches something, you've done something.
In anger Tanny or in celebration?
Yes.
Okay, both.
Tanny is the conscience of our station.
Wait.
No, it wasn't that quick.
Wait.
Fight Club.
This feels like an eternity.
R.I.P. Louis Anderson. Wait.
That is an eternity.
As funny as it is, I still think we're underrating it.
Yeah.
I can't talk.
That's actually like everybody at the Robert Fripp concert. That's just like they're waiting there, except there's no music. And then they're like, let's get out of here.
Isn't music supposed to sound good?
R.I.P. Louis Anderson.
Sound?
Yes, it's supposed to. Something's supposed to happen.
I'm telling you, the wait is infinity. The best part of that. It's not even close. Yeah. But the pause with like the fast paced music, and I'm like, how many beats of this music are gonna go on before he says something?
Here's the bit. Picture the musicians playing behind him and exchanging askance glances. Right. The piano is like really into him. He's kicked over the piano stool and he's up there doing the Jerry Lee Lewis. You know, the bass is just laying it down. And they're all kind of like, hey, what?
Fight Club. R.I.P. Louis Anderson. Wait.
It's just so many notes before he says something.
You know the Weezer video for Buddy Holly, where it's they're in Arnold's from Happy Days.
Everybody, stop hitting 69 on George's license plate.
You remember like the look that Rivers Cuomo gives Fonzie when he starts doing the Russian dance and that? There's this quick like Simon's like, what the hell are you doing? What the heck is that? I imagine everybody like, hey, Louis Anderson. What?
Okay. The text lines brought up a couple options, so I want to present these to you guys.
Yes. This has been a great football segment, by the way.
Either
best we've ever
Robert
done.
Fripp in concert. So we'll say for standard amount of time for all these things, Parkin singing a parody song or Shane doing a pajamagram read. You're forced to listen to one.
Ooh.
Parkins singing. The Shane pajamagram is too weird.
Yeah, I think Parkins sings rough though. I mean, singing is supposed to sound good. I'm going to take death, I think. I think I'm going to choose death.
Technically singing is supposed to just sound. There's nothing in singing that says it has to be good.
Truth. I think we're asking the wrong person. I think we need to be asking Spiegel.
If singing should sound good or what he would choose?
What he would choose. Spiegel makes singing sound good.
Right. He's a professional singer.
And then there's Danny.
Justin Fields forever.
I need to hear more Robert Fripp to make this decision.
Fair.
I don't think we have any loaded in, which is probably for the best.
Yeah, come on, studs. You've got Mastodon, but you don't have Robert Fripp.
This is a real letdown from last week. Last week, I was all hype. We were playing metal. We mentioned random box scores on like some sort of stream of consciousness tilt.
Wait, what metal were we playing? Last week?
Mastodon? Yes! I'm now more awake. Why didn't I do this to begin the show?
Fight Club. R.I.P. Louis Anderson.
This makes me want to fall out of a tree like an iguana.
That's the proper response. Your eyes go back in your head and you fall out of a tree and you land on the pavement and members of pavement.
With a book on your head.
All of that seems reasonable.
When we come back, we're going to talk about Baseball Hall of Fame voting.
Are we?
If I remember correctly, the Baseball Hall of Fame makes their announcement of thumbs up, thumbs down, usually around dinner time. Is it usually around 6 o'clock or so?
Somewhere tonight.
Yeah, if memory serves, it's usually around dinner time when they'll tell you what's going on with the voting. It's a massive ballot with a lot of deserving names depending on how the moral arc of history may bend. And I guess it looks like David Ortiz will somehow thread the needle and they think get enough votes, but it's hard to tell from early returns whether Bonds or Clemens or Sheffield or Helton or anybody else is going to make it in. I don't know.
Are you saying that my dream of a White Sox ballot is probably dead? I was like, Mark Burley, Peavy, Pierzynski.
That's three.
Justin Morneau with that four. Cup of coffee with the Sox. Manny Ramirez because they won't let anybody else wear number 99.
Andrew Jones.
He's a Hall of Famer, by the way. He's got to get in.
He is a Hall of Famer.
Absolutely. At some point, he's got to get in, but that man is a Hall of Famer.
But so is Lou Whitaker, and so is Bobby Gritch, and there are plenty of others where there are injustices.
There is a name on here that I think we've all watched enough of to where I am curious if you think he's a Hall of Famer. I don't think Mark Teixeira is a Hall of Famer, but I think the numbers might say he is.
Ooh, that doesn't sound right. First blush, like, I would say no.
His numbers in the first 3-4 years of his career, but I just don't think he's a Hall of Famer. I also don't think Tim Lincecum is, but I think I'm on the fence with that one.
All right, Mark Teixeira. Okay, this may surprise you, but Mark Teixeira slashed .268/.360/.509. A career OPS of 869. That's an OPS plus that sort of tracks a WRC plus of 126. He had 409 homers. He had 408 doubles. And if we're actually going to go to some of the metrics that Baseball Reference uses, where it looks like a no.
I don't think so.
That would be a no. Because his Jaws score, he's 31st among first basemen with a Jaws score of 44.3. The average first baseman has a Jaws score of 54.2. So that looks like a no. And as far as anybody among similar players in the Hall of Fame, of his 10 most similar, the only one is Gil Hodges, who got in a long time ago when the standards were a bit different.
It is a ballot that I feel like the only obvious ones are the ones that people aren't going to vote for necessarily. The Bonds, Clemens, Jeff Kent, whether or not you think there was something there. David Ortiz to me is a Hall of Famer. He just is.
Even though he's in.
But he was still dominant above those.
Well, I mean, Barry Bonds is second only to Babe Ruth.
I think Barry Bonds should be in the Hall of Fame.
Yes. I do, too. I think Roger Clemens should, too.
Gary Sheffield, to me, obvious, right?
Probably, yes, but he didn't. He had 400-some homers. Gary Sheffield definitely in the Hall of Fame for, as far as right-handed hitters go, one of the most impersonated wiffle ball swings.
Oh, yeah. Him, like, in the backyard, it was Griffey, Jeff Bagwell, Gary Sheffield, Frank Thomas.
Bagwell was the one we all tried to impersonate and like fell down half the time or something.
Mine was Daryl Strawberry. That was the that whippy sort of flick of the ball out of the park.
Batista that started by being square to the pitcher.
Oh yeah, the with completely open. Yeah, like belt buckle facing the pitcher. Yes.
Yes. I tried to do that one a few times. Didn't end very well.
Gary Sheffield. Wow. Okay.
Yeah. Like
907 OPS.
Yep.
140 OPS plus. Yep. Career WAR of 60.5 per Baseball Reference.
I mean, game set match. Thank you,
Gary Sheffield. I would vote for Gary Sheffield. But how about his numbers from 93 to 2005? Like he's what would be considered his best stretch as a pro. A slash line of 301, 413, 549, an OPS of 962, an OPS plus of 152. He's also close to 400 homers across 12 seasons there. It's an easy one for me. I would vote for Sheffield, and I would absolutely argue for Andrew Jones, and I'd love to hear the argument from those who don't vote for Andrew Jones.
Gary Sheffield's Jaws score is 49.3. Just so you know, that's the Jay Jaffe created stat that balances your peak value with your career value. The average Hall of Fame right fielder is at 56.7, but here are the most statistically similar players to Gary Sheffield. There are 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7 of his 10 are Hall of Famers. Chipper Jones, Mel Ott, Reggie Jackson, Carlos Beltran, Ken Griffey Jr., Fred McGriff, Miguel Cabrera, Mickey Mantle, Billy Williams, and Frank Robinson.
Okay, then.
Welcome in Gary Sheffield.
Look at Gary Sheffield's walk to strikeout numbers. It's unbelievable. Across his career, 1,475 walks compared to 1,171 strikeouts.
Yeah, that's like DiMaggio.
It's unbelievable.
Billy Wagner is an interesting one to me. I don't think Billy Wagner is a Hall of Famer, but a lot of people do.
The whole closer thing got weird. Once you started
Trevor
down,
and Mariano, and then it's a case-by-case basis. Papelbon is also on here.
Too much of a penis.
But I think he's in. You could argue Papelbon is in.
Can we just like extrapolate Tampa Bay Carl Crawford and not let the Boston thing happen? Because Tampa Bay Carl Crawford was one of my favorite players in the league.
Yeah, I don't think that's enough.
Oh, no, it's not enough. No, but like, if he was able to play like that wherever he ended up next, not Boston, then that would have. He would have had a chance because, God, he was fun to watch.
Thank you to the texters who also said the name that I always think of with a swing impersonation, and that's Craig Counsell.
Oh, yeah, sure.
Why is it always two? Why is it always two?
A little bit of that thing.
Circle,
and
circle.
And then Ichiro a little bit too. But trying to get the footwork right on that thing is like good luck.
Well, by making contact where you're already out of the batter's box?
Yes.
But the...
You know, think tennis
presentation.
Backhand.
Ah, that just hit me in a nice little baseball feels.
In 847 brought up Jock Jones. He got a vote. Jock Jones had a Hall of Fame vote when he was on the ballot.
Man, Aaron Seeley got a vote.
Jock Jones is a Hall of Famer if your Hall of Fame is slapping the ball off home plate in the Metrodome against the White Sox. Him and Christian Guzman.
And Nick Punto and
Denny
Hocking.
Nick Punto is a Hall of Famer at blooping the ball over Paul Konerko's head.
Yep. And Nick Punto do it again. Darn it.
How do you feel about
Corey Koski and Michael Kadire?
Oh,
get them
man.
All out of here.
Louis, man. How are we feeling about Joe Nathan being on this ballot?
Another one. It's like you can't. At some point, we need a closer. It's like, okay, you've done a great job at something that statistics probably don't really represent what it is you do quite the right way. Congrats. Thanks to Jerome Holtzman. Thank you. Thanks to Tony La Russa. For creating whatever it is, we now understand better the way these things work. I don't know.
No, but to me, Hoffman and Mariano, they're Hall of Famers.
Okay.
That's a no-doubter.
I mean, Joe Nathan's not... Lee Smith is a Hall of Famer, right?
Joe Nathan's got big, big save numbers, right?
I know.
If you go by just the numbers, which you do.
Yeah,
like,
but
go by the watching baseball test.
I do, but we also go by what we now know the save is and isn't. And what it means and what it doesn't mean.
Yeah, but also just go by the watching baseball test.
Yeah, Cubs fans get too much of the watching late Joe Nathan baseball test.
But he was like that for the last five years of his career.
Well, and also Cubs fans know from Goose Gossage and Rick Aguilera and any number of who was the guy from the Expo, Mel Rojas, that there's always a, hey, they got this guy. Yes, well, he's bad now. Well, they didn't tell us that. Lawrence Holmes is wandering around in a Chicago Blitz shirt looking like Greg Landry or Trumaine Johnson. He will join us next on The Score.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of four lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.
Protect your vehicle's engine with a full synthetic oil change and save with Mobil 1 at O'Reilly Auto Parts. Purchase 5 quarts of Mobil 1 full synthetic motor oil and receive a $10 O'Reilly gift card after rebate. See store for details. With your Mobil 1 purchase, you'll also receive 2x points during Old Rewards Bonus Points Month at O'Reilly Auto Parts.
Oh, 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 O'Reilly Auto Parts.
It's time for MLB Pitch, Hit, and Run. The official youth skills competition of Major League Baseball. Host a local event and give kids in your community a chance to compete in the Pitch, Hit, and Run finals at the 2024 MLB World Series. Sign up for free at pitchhitrun.com.